Master. Load. Ready. Fire.
Straddling the border between northern Georgia and Tennessee, the Battle of Chickamauga in the fall and winter of 1863 was one of the bloodiest Civil War battles. In commemoration, the site was established as the first National Military Park in 1890, and it is one of the first national park sites in America. Come along and join National Park Ranger Lee White, who specializes in the human aspects of the Civil War soldiers. What they ate, the clothes and boots they wore, the diseases that killed them by the thousands, and their emotional state of being is documented in their poignant letters home. Ranger Lee White.
It's kind of one of my interests with Civil War soldiers is to try to take them from the bronze and granite men that you see on monuments on the battlefield and to realize that these were actual living, breathing human beings, mostly young men in their late teens and early 20s with their whole lives ahead of them. And, you know, what their lives were then like, what would motivate them to move out onto the battlefield to kill men they shared the same language, the same culture, many of the same cultures, the same history with, but also then what these men felt, what these men endured on long marches, what it was like to wear the clothing they did, to eat the terrible food that they did, and keep on going, their ideas, their ideology, to be able to fight this war. Why would they put themselves through this? Why would they put their families through this, particularly as the carnage mounted as the war went along? You know, some of the suffering these men went through on both sides, particularly when you look at things like their shoes, leather shoes, not fitted to your feet. You know, it was kind of a little joke. You know, today you get a new pair of shoes, you have to break the shoes in. Well, back then the shoes broke you in, being heavy, thick leather. And then, of course, marching 15, 20 miles a day in hot, humid weather, wearing wool pants, wool coats, long sleeve shirts, long leg and underwear. You know, they would still go through this fighting wearing this. And then for an evening meal, you get your Union soldier, you get hardtack, which is a rock hard soda type cracker, salt pork, heavily salted piece of bacon, and coffee. And that's what you have for breakfast, that's what you have for lunch, that's what you have for dinner, day after day after day. And even in the Confederate Army, it's not even better. Time of the fighting around here at Chattanooga, Confederate Army's being fed boiled beef and cornbread. But then again, that's for every single meal, every single day. So the monotony of the diet added to it, to the monotony of the existence. And again, we tend to think now 150 years down the road that society is so much different, and in a lot of ways it is, but then there's some parts of a teenager, there's some parts of a young man in his 20s that's the same in every generation. So, you know, how young men get fed up with having the same thing maybe twice a week. Well, here it is. They're having to have the same thing to eat every single day.
Lee, there's that other dimension, the physiological, their health,
yeah.
Dental, dysentery, and no antibiotics.
Even with the war itself being blessed war, more deaths of Americans than any war in history, over 700,000 dead, but they're not dying from bullets or bayonets. Most of these men are dying from sickness, and the big killer is dysentery. Large portion of that, again, is you've got these young men who've been taken care of by mama at home. They're coming off to war. Now they're trying to cook for themselves. They're not preparing the food right. They eat undercooked pork. They're going to get sick. They're going to get stagnant water. Again, that's another thing they don't know about is also what type of water they a lot of times drink. They know good water, bad water, but not in the way they should. And so they're drinking water. They're getting sick. And then also these young men, both north and south, majority come from very rural communities. When they come together in these armies, it's like these armies are becoming some of the largest population centers in the country. And so young men never been exposed to smallpox or chicken pox or anything. You're going to have these epidemics breaking out. And before the first shot's even fired, you've got thousands of men that are already dead.
Or dying.
Yeah. But it's going to continue all the way through.
Tell us about your study of the medical corps and how they
operated?
Well, the Medical Corps of the War is kind of a haphazard situation. They're starting out they're learning on the fly. No understanding of antibiotics or any of that, but they are beginning to get some inclination as things go on throughout the war about certain things, certain conditions making the soldiers better. You know, they're no longer bleeding men or any of that, but still through the war itself, a lot of it comes out. The idea of what we now call triage is going to be developed during the Civil War. We're going to even have this beginning of plastic surgery. Even some of the infant steps of that are going to start out in the Civil War.
In your studies, you read some primary source conversations, letters that soldiers had written home. Tell us about some of your most touching things that you've read, those voices that you've heard.
That's my main interest, is what they had to say. And there's some real heartbreaking things in there. I'll share two with you. One of a Union soldier here, Isaac Shulman, was a young man who was wounded here. And he kept a diary. And he noted in the diary every day he was out on the battlefield. He was out on the battlefield 7 days before he received medical attention. It was a slight wound, a wound that would normally a man would easily bounce back from, but because he lay on this field so long, he died. Young boy from Illinois, college student, had left college to go off to war, kept this diary. He just kind of stands out to me as a haunting thing of the lost potential of this war. What could this young man have done with his life, but it's wasted out here on the battlefield? And another one is a young man by the name of Joshua Calloway. He was a lieutenant from Alabama who had left behind his wife and two very small children to go off to war. And he wrote his wife religiously, just constantly throughout the war. And he becomes one of the saddest things because he's absolutely miserable. He misses her. He misses the children so desperately. But he feels that he can't leave. He has an option as an officer resigning and going back home, unlike the enlisted men who were stuck in the army. He could go home, but he's afraid of what his reputation would be if he did that. But some of his letters are just absolutely rip your heart out, because you can just feel the sadness. And he even says in 1.1 letters that the stains on the letter are tears that he has falling on the letter.
As you read these letters, you could hear their voices. You had a sense you knew them.
Yes. That's one of the things with Civil War soldiers. Up to that time, they were the most literate group of soldiers that had come around in history. Their letters and diaries are just unbelievable. Just new stuff is constantly being found and being able to get in heads. And again, taking them from being these marble soldiers, these bronze things we see on the monuments, or just this nameless image we see in an old photograph, this adds that these were young men who had hopes, they had dreams, and also in cases, they're good men, but there's also bad men that, you know, just as far as a characteristic, there's young men who like to drink, like to gamble, surprise, surprise, get in trouble, but then, you know, others who are very stoic, very philosophical men. You know, it runs the gamut from well-educated to men who are writing out their letters, their words, just the way they talk and the way it sounds to them.
Before we go, right now we're at Chickamauga National Battlefield in Georgia, and there are some distinctive, unique characteristics to this location, even historically within the national park. Tell us about two of the interesting aspects.
Well, two of the things is that this is the oldest national military park, the oldest battlefield park that's preserved, and also by default one of the oldest national parks in the agency.
So this was the first national park battlefield.
Right.
And that was like, what,
1890? But another thing, the battlefield here is also unique just among Civil War battlefields, because it's a forested battlefield. There's no other battle in the Civil War quite like this one. And even for soldiers who fought in such terrible battles as Antietam or Gettysburg, would later write on that the worst battle they were ever in was Chickamauga, and it's because of the woods. They can't see each other till they're right on top of one another. And as one Union general later wrote, this battle was bushwhacking on a grand scale.
The other dimension predates the Civil War, And that's the archaeological aspect. Tell us about that.
Yeah, that's another thing. People tend to look at one site as being only one thing, but there's many chapters of history at this with the Chickamauga and Chattanooga National Military Park. We've got the Moccasin Bend Unit, which has over 10,000 years of Native American history. You've got some of the very first Native Americans in the continent making a presence on Moccasin Bend, and that presence is going to be steady up until the forced removal of the Cherokee in the Trail of Tears in the 1830s.
Ranger Lee White, thank you so much for sharing.
Thank
it's
you.
So great to see you again here in Georgia at Chickamauga.
Thank you. Good to see you as well.
Thank you, Lee.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomascwilmer.com. Our associate producers from the San Francisco Bay Area include Molly Blaisdell, Lori King, and Susie Rodriguez. Melissa Corbin reporting from Knoxville, Tennessee, Rebecca Nolan, Newfoundland, Canada, Kim Schneider from Michigan, Elaine Masters in San Diego, Julie Henning, Eugene, Oregon, Rebecca Bingham, Hot Springs, Arkansas, and Steve Cook contributing from Little Rock, Arkansas, host of Arkansongs on NPR affiliate KUAR.